In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
Holy cow! Oh my God! I don't believe it! It just continues!
Another episode of the Sports Hour. This is Mitch Mo.
And this is Dallin. Guys, welcome in. We've got a ton of NBA stuff to talk about. Isn't that right, Mitch?
Loads of NBA stuff.
Yeah, we had the end of the NBA Finals, which we'll talk about briefly. We know it's been like about a week, maybe a little over a week since that happened, but we'll recap that briefly. We've had big trades, including the Anthony Davis to the Lakers trade, which I have obviously so many thoughts and opinions and feelings on. And then the NBA draft, which is Thursday, June 20th. So we're going to just look over the draft, give you guys our thoughts as we look at the lottery. Some of these picks are pretty set, especially the top three, but after that is where it gets interesting. So we're going to kind of just take a look at that and, you know, get excited for what should be a fun night tomorrow night.
Yeah. Yeah. There's, like Dallin said, the top three are pretty predictable, but I think maybe some unforeseen takes on this. I'm not hinting or foreshadowing at all, but maybe some unforeseen takes on those top three. But after that, it does get really interesting. Who goes where? And so it'll be a fun conversation to have.
For sure. Okay, well, let's start it off with what is the oldest bit of news, but arguably the most significant. The Toronto Raptors ended up winning the NBA Finals in six games, an outcome you and I, Mitch, did not see coming. We both had Warriors in six. And obviously the injury bug bit the Warriors hard this year. Kevin Durant missed all of but 8 minutes in this Finals. Klay Thompson missed a game and then was injured in game six. Both with serious injuries that will miss significant time, affecting the outcome of the Warriors next year, which is all crazy in and of itself. But let's start by focusing in on the Toronto Raptors, because injuries or not, they deserved this win. They played hard. They played their hearts out for six games and ultimately got the victory led by Kawhi. Mitch, what were your thoughts on the Raptors and their performance in this NBA Finals?
I mean, they played extremely well. Kawhi Leonard played out of his mind. I think with the exception of game one, which he still played pretty decent in game one. And that slack was picked up by Pascal Siakam, which I think we talked about, what a role he was going to play. Even though he kind of fizzled out, as the series went along. But I will say this is, I think the Raptors, though a very good team, I don't think the best team to come out of the East. I still think the Bucks were the better team there. I think they caught the Bucks on a bad stretch. I think if Klay stays healthy in game six, we get a game seven. And in game seven, anything can happen in sports. It doesn't matter, regardless of the sport. Game seven, anything happens. KD's healthy through it. We get a game six, and the series is over in six. The Warriors win that game, though. The Warriors win that series. I think this was heavily dependent on the banged up, battered Warriors just not having enough firepower to really counteract a very good Raptors team, as well as they played. I think that the injuries played a bigger role in this. And this is not me being Homer or anything like this. I really do think the injuries played a much bigger role.
Well, of course, the injuries affect, you know, the matchups, but I think it's unfair to the Toronto Raptors to discount it and say, well, if this and if that, then this is the result. We don't know. I mean, we could sit here and say, if Durant is healthy the whole time, if Klay doesn't go down, if Klay doesn't miss What was it, game four? If he doesn't miss game four, you know, we could do ifs all along. I mean, we could do it all day. But in the end, it doesn't matter because there were teams on the court and players that were healthy that were on the court. Kawhi was injured this entire playoffs. You could tell he was limping throughout the finals.
Yeah, but I don't know if it was as significant as...
Well, it's not an ACL tear, that's for sure. But
or a snapped Achilles.
Right, but the point is like injuries happen. And we don't look back on the 2015 Warriors NBA Finals and discredit them from beating the Cavs when it was literally LeBron James versus the Warriors. There was no Kyrie. There was no Kevin Love. And we don't look back and discount that series because of that. The Warriors won, and they deserved to win, and they were the healthier team, but they still won, and that doesn't discount their finals. And we don't need to sit here and be like, well, if Kyrie and Kevin Love were healthy, then the Cavs probably win that series. But it doesn't matter because that's not what happened. And ultimately, injuries, whatever, storylines, it is what it is. The Toronto Raptors were the better team. They were playing great basketball throughout this entire playoff series. They beat the Bucks, who were the number one team in the NBA all regular season, with the presumed MVP, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and, you know, had the buzzer beater shot against the Sixers in the second round to even advance Eastern Conference Finals. This was a team of destiny. This was the best unit in the entire NBA playoffs. Getting contributions from other guys, like you said, the Danny Greens, the Fred Van Fleets, Pascal Siakam, Mark Gasol, all of these, Kyle Lowry, all these guys stepping up around Kawhi. And this was the best team in the playoffs. And that's why they won. And I don't know. I try to stay away from the ifs because we could if on every single, you know, series. You look at the 2016 finals. If Draymond doesn't get suspended for punching LeBron in the nuts, the Warriors win that series in six. I mean, doesn't even go to game seven. So like,
right, so we can't if.
No, we can't. That's the point. Is like
you just did an if.
Well, that's the problem with it. That's my point. That's why I'm saying that is because we could look at every single series and if on it. Every single NBA series, we could if on it. Every single game, we could if we wanted to. There's always factors, but in the end, what is on the court is on the court. And when you're at that stage, you got to win no matter what. Doesn't matter. No excuses, injuries aside, like it is what it is. And Toronto was the better team and they won and they deserved it.
You know, Dallin, you told me one time this show's about takes. And my take is if the Warriors stay healthy, it's a six-game series and they still come out on top. I think I can if here. Because I think there is enough factors that were changed. I think there are enough factors affected that you can if in this one. I really think you can, because I don't think there's a whole lot of people out there. I wouldn't say a single person. I would say there's a whole lot of people out there that if the Warriors were healthy would still take the Raptors. I don't think there's a whole lot of people out there that would do that. And I don't think there's a whole lot of people that would buy in to the narrative that the Raptors still win that series with a fully healthy Warriors team.
So because
like, I mean, look, Clay in a key game six, Clay, who historically has been great in game sixes and was having a great game up until the ACL tear. Kevin Durant's out the entire playoffs. Kevin Looney's playing with a broken collarbone. I think you can if in this situation, and I think it's a validated point.
The thing is, like I said, you can if about anything. So, like, if Kawhi Leonard's arm falls off game one of the finals, then the Warriors probably win it. But, like, that didn't happen. So, like,
oh, but that's extreme. Come on.
Well, of course it is. But that's the point. You can if about anything. So what's the point? Like, why does it matter? Because that is just an alternate reality. We could sit here and say if the Warriors were healthy, none of us think they would win. Well, that's great. But nobody thought that the Cleveland Cavaliers playing the 73-win Golden State Warriors would win that series. But that's how it happened. There's no ifs with that. That is how it happened. Nobody would have predicted that, but it happened. And nobody would have predicted that Toronto wins this in six, but it happened because that's the reality of sports. And I think it's unfair to a champion who deserved to win it, who earned that victory, to have ifs about it. Well, if you guys, if the other team was healthy, or then you guys wouldn't have won. It's like, well, nobody, we don't know that. We could sit here and say that, Mitch, but you and I don't know that. We don't know what the result would be.
Look,
if the Warriors were healthy.
No, and I'm not saying that they don't deserve it. They played very, very well. I'm just saying that it wouldn't have happened. I don't think it would have happened with a fully Warriors.
Well, it just, by saying team. If, it just qualifies it, it puts an asterisk next to it as like, they won because of this circumstance, but if this circumstance wasn't there, they wouldn't have won. Therefore, this isn't really like a full victory. It's like 0.8. It's 80% of a win of an NBA Finals because there's this 20% circumstance that's just given to them, luck, if you will. And that's just unfair.
Well, okay, so is it – I'm going to go back in history here just to make an argument here. Bulls win 3 championships with Jordan, right?
Yep.
Then he goes away and they don't win.
Right.
Then he comes back and they win 3 more. Could you put an asterisk next to those last 3 because they had Jordan? They didn't have Jordan? I mean, because –
Well, yeah, I mean, you could say that, but again, what's the point? Like, why would you say that? Why would you say, well, if they didn't have Jordan, they wouldn't win? Of course. Well, if the Utah Jazz had Michael Jordan on their team instead of John Stockton in those finals, they probably would have won too.
And if they would have had KD or Klay Thompson, then they probably would have won it.
But my point is like, why does that matter? Like, you could say that for every single game, in every single series, in every single moment, you could say if this, if that. But in the end,
ifs are part of sports. That's what
it's not
at.
Though, because in reality, we had 6 games and we had 2 teams and they battled it out over those 6 games and one team came away as the victor.
Ifs are part of sports and you have
they to shouldn't be. They shouldn't
what if,
be.
What if Pete Carroll had handed it off to Marshawn instead of throwing it on the one?
That's great, but that's a different thing, though, because we're not if you use that to disqualify the Patriots earning that victory, then that's wrong. We can sit here and speculate and say, what if LeBron never left Cleveland? That's a great if to have, but that doesn't disqualify anybody's victory. Like, when you say if the Warriors were healthy, the Raptors don't win, that's unfair to this Raptor squad that did win a finals. They showed up and they won, and the Warriors had injuries, but ultimately they didn't win. And that is what it is.
I mean, I'm not arguing. Okay. I think we agree to disagree on this one just because, and this is a fun conversation of ifs. And I think
it's a
it is a giant if, and we could revisit this another time, but I think we have other stuff we need to get into. So let's put this conversation on pause for another day. Let's get into the biggest. Probably, well, it will be the biggest trade of the offseason. I don't think there's one that's going to top it. We did have a big one today, the Mike Conley trade, which I think we'll briefly get into in just a minute. But let's start with the AD trade, the Anthony Davis trade, going to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers landing the biggest fish in the sea of players. I think that's how I worded it on the Instagram page. The biggest fish in the sea of players. But it comes at a price. Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, Josh Hart. 3 first-round picks, including this year's number 4 overall pick, going to New Orleans in exchange for Anthony Davis. The big question is who wins this? Because obviously the Lakers get the best big man in basketball, right? I mean, we can agree.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
AD's the best big man in basketball.
Absolutely.
His diversity on the court and what he's able to do. His athleticism is unparalleled. His unibrow is second to none. but, I mean, at first glance, it seems like a steep price. And I think you and I are both on the same page that the Lakers still win this trade. And I would like you to go into depth, Dallin, maybe why, explaining to the listeners, why the Lakers win this trade.
Okay, so here's the first thing that I have to say. I'm not a fan of these win-lose trades immediately after the trade because we don't know. Like,
sure.
Could get injured game one and never be the same. And, you know what I mean? Then the Lakers lose the trade, right? But we don't know. So when you're looking at it like this, there is a thought process a lot of people have, especially within the media, NBA fans, that if you got the best player in the trade, then you won the trade. And obviously Anthony Davis is by and far the best player in this trade involved in this. We don't know what the future picks will be, but even at the number four pick, Anthony Davis is way better than anybody in this trade. So if you look at it like that, the Lakers win. Ultimately, my feeling on it is this, and we talked about this at the trade deadline when this was all swirling around months ago, with who Anthony Davis is before his prime, if we're being honest, dude is still extremely young. You have to give up whatever it takes to get this guy. And I actually think that they did a good job of not giving up too much. They kept one of the big three out of it. It was Lonzo, Ingram, and Kuzma. And those were the guys at the trade deadline. That was part of the offer. And they were able to hold on to Kuzma. Kuzma makes a lot of sense. He's a talented player, but salary-wise, he has the lowest salary of any of those players. So holding on to him was important for the salary cap. Smart move by Rob Pelinka and the Lakers, able to hold on to him and give up more future assets. The future assets, I know a lot of people have a lot of worries about the Pelicans controlling the Lakers draft over the next, 8 years or whatever it is. But ultimately, if the Lakers are good, even if they're post-LeBron, they're still in prime of AD, and they're still going to probably be a playoff team. So those picks, yes, there are multiple first-round picks involved, but those aren't going to be top 10 picks. Those aren't going to be lottery picks. They're more than likely going to be late 20s picks. And in the end, I think if you're the Lakers, you will trade that. That is okay with you. As much as I love these young players from the Lakers, Ingram has had health issues and development issues. I think he made a big jump this year, but he still has leaps to go to be the player that a lot of people thought he would be. Lonzo has shown flashes of skill. We know what he can do defensively and as a facilitator, but he has also had injury issues, and that has limited his first two seasons. Josh Hart is a great bench player, but that's all it is. The number four pick is going to be a rotational type player. It's not going to be anybody crazy, most likely. So, yeah, I think if you look at it all like that, the Lakers made the smart move. They got the guy. I know a lot of people are saying, yeah, well, he would have come next year in free agency. But we don't know that. He can say, I will go to LA next year regardless. But we've seen the Paul Georges. We don't know what's going to happen with Kawhi. It's quite possible Kawhi ends up staying in Toronto if he liked it that much. And that could happen to an AD if he ends up in a Boston or a New York or somewhere else. And so the Lakers wanted a guy. They knew they wanted him. They knew they needed him. And they made it. And they got it done. They got it done. And that's what I'm happy about. You don't let a player like this pass you by. The Lakers now have two of the top five players in the league, probably. AD is probably right around that five mark, if not six or seven. I mean, two top eight players, if you will. The only other team that can say that in the NBA is the Golden State Warriors. So they automatically become the competition to the Golden State Warriors. And so I think it's a great trade. I think the Pelicans are going to end up pretty good out of this as well. Because like I said, I do like those young pieces. And to pair up guys like Lonzo with Zion is going to be a ton of fun. I think the Pelicans are going to make good out of this too, and ultimately it'll be a win, if you will, for both teams.
Yeah, I actually 99% agree with you.
We agree sometimes.
We agree sometimes. because I think this is a move for a Pelicans rebuild. They wouldn't give up a centerpiece like this if they weren't going to rebuild. My only question is does this really put the Lakers over the top in the West? Because, I mean, AD is a huge impact player, but is one guy going to be the big difference maker there?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, you have Anthony Davis and LeBron James. That is a top four seed in the West. Like, unless you're surrounding them with only second round picks, that is a top four seed in the West, just those two players alone. And that's fine. But to get to the finals, what's going to matter is how they fill out the roster around them, which is why I am in the camp that they shouldn't take the 22, 28, 33, whatever million they end up, and they shouldn't spend it all on one player, and they should surround LeBron, KD and Kuzma with role players that can fit what they're going to be able to do offensively, defensively, the shortcomings of LeBron and AD and Kuzma, who I probably see as the third option in this team, and fill those roles with those types of players and then veterans. And I think if they can fill out the right team around those guys, then yes, then they may be the best competition to the Golden State Warriors next year. But we don't know that right now. And I don't think – I mean, I know Vegas had them as the title odds now. I think that's just because Anthony Davis plus LeBron James equals NBA Finals. Like, that's an equation. That's math. It makes sense. Those guys are great players. You know, we can get our minds around that, but there are still things to be worked out with this team to get there. And a new head coach on top of that.
Right. So, I mean – the reason I'm directing this at you is you're the resident Lakers fan. So I feel like you are more qualified.
And expert at that. You know?
So yeah, honestly, you're more qualified to answer these questions. So that's why I'm directing them at you. So to my understanding, with that extra, you know, money that they have right now, you're not a fan of them trying to go out and go get Kawhi and Kemba at the same time?
Well, they won't get both. There's no way. That's what I've read.
They're trying to get both.
All that is bullshit. Okay, any writer that's like, oh, the Lakers are interested in signing Kawhi. Yeah, no, guess who else is interested in signing Kawhi? Every other team in the NBA. All 29 teams would love to sign Kawhi Leonard. Every team is interested in signing Kawhi, in Kemba, in Kyrie. Those are great. But ultimately, the Lakers don't have the cap space to do that. If everything fell their way, they could get up to $30 million and have a shot at one of those guys, but they're going to be taking discounts to come to LA. And if you sign one of those guys, then you literally have to fill your roster with veteran minimums and second round pick salaries. And that is not going to be a good team. So you are better off taking that money, signing a guys like JJ Redick, maybe Malcolm Brogdon, who can be around 10, 12 million. Then you start filling them out with $5, $6 million guys, get some veteran minimums in there. And then you have pieces around these two star players that work. Darren Collison, a name that's been thrown out. I mean, there are a ton of guys that I think would work in this scenario, and the Lakers just have to find those right pieces, but they're better off building a team out of that money than they are spending it on another superstar. And then it really is just a four-headed, it's just a four versus five team. I mean, the rest of the team is not going to be good, and you need to have a bench in the playoffs. We know that. We've seen that. It would be foolish for them to spend that on a max contract. And unfortunately, I think that's what they're going to try to do. Mitch, let's talk about the Pelicans' perspective on this, though. What do you think of this team now? Yes, a rebuilding team, but, I mean, you still have Drew Holiday. Now you have Lonzo, Ingram, obviously Zion. What they do with the fourth pick, there are rumors it could be traded. Minnesota is interested in moving up from 11. So that, you know, maybe they get a player in that pick out of that to fill in the roster. I mean, there are different directions to take this, but on paper, this is a talented young core. What do you think of the Pelicans now?
Well, I'm a big fan of having draft capital, especially when you give up a big centerpiece like Anthony Davis like that. I don't know if Drew Holiday is someone you build a team around. And so honestly, like, I'd tank. I'd send Drew Holiday somewhere. The Suns seem like a pretty good destination for Drew Holiday, and try to get another first-round pick out of it and literally just whore yourself out for first-round pick right now. That's what I would be doing if I was the Pelicans. I don't think I'd be trying to build around Drew Holiday because he's still a young, talented player, but I don't know if there's enough. But now, if they hold on to that fourth, I'm okay with them holding on to Drew Holiday because then you get a guy like – you know, you get Zion Williamson and then a Jarrett Culver after that, and that four pick. So that's a scenario that works, that I think works. But honestly, I'm skeptical about building a team around Drew Holiday.
Well, and that's the nice position the Pelicans are in is – obviously, their centerpiece is a rookie right now, and their other core players, the Ingrams and the Lonzos, are also very young. So they can, you know, keep Drew Holiday this season, like you said, see how it goes, and maybe at the trade deadline, they become sellers to a team that wants, you know, a veteran point guard, you know. And we saw teams at the trade deadline this year, Indiana, Detroit, Utah, who were in the market for a guy like Mike Conley. Kyle Lowry's name was even, you know, thrown out there here and there. That could be a valuable piece that teams seek after, and they can get out of that young players and, like you said, draft capital in next year's draft. So they're in a good position to hold on to a guy like that and then use him as a trade as asset either at the trade deadline or next summer going into the draft to pick up more draft capital, you know, depending on what their situation is like. So I think they're in a good spot. Jrue Holiday and Lonzo is a very interesting backcourt to me. And regardless of how this all shakes out, this could be a pretty good defensive team. Zion obviously has Draymond-like qualities as an NBA player. He's better than Draymond Green, and he will be. But defensively, his versatility, he's going to wreak havoc on the defensive end. And Jrue Holiday and Lonzo probably make the best defensive backcourt of any NBA team. I mean, those guys would be stellar. So it makes an interesting team, and I think the Pelicans are going to give themselves a chance to see how that could work. And if it doesn't, or they feel like what they can get in return for a Jrue Holiday is worth it, then they make the trade. And they pull the trigger there. But I actually think they're in a pretty good spot. And that's why I say, like, out of this trade, I think both teams should be happy with what they got.
I mean, I'm just going to throw out a scenario because I really like Jrue Holiday to the Suns. I really like that fit. Yeah. I just want to point out who he'd be playing with. I mean, a Devin Booker and Jrue Holiday backcourt. Seems pretty badass to me. I'm not going to lie. And then you go and pair him up with DeAndre Ayton. You have Booker, Holiday, and Ayton. That's a pretty formidable three there. Then you also throw in guys like Kelly Oubre.
Mm-hmm. Josh Jackson.
D'Anthony Melton, another one. Well, no, sorry, not him.
No, Mikal Bridges, though.
Mikal Bridges.
He's another solid young player who I really like a lot.
That turns that Phoenix Suns team around quite a bit, I think. And I think that the Suns need to consider that, if the Pelicans are going to have this fire sale that they're having right now.
Yeah. Well, and that is what that they're in a good position. Cause like you said, I mean, they can make that trade, send a guy like Jrue Holiday back, and maybe they get like a Josh Jackson in return, or maybe, and that's a piece that they like, or maybe they get a Mikal Bridges and next year's first. And so it's further draft capital, but I think both teams made off well in this trade. It's going to be interesting to see New Orleans this year. Obviously interesting to see how the Lakers fill out their roster, but I think when you have an opportunity at a guy like this at his age in Anthony Davis, you don't turn it down. You give up whatever it takes. And they did. And I salute the Lakers and Rob Pelinka for getting it done and holding on to one of their three core young players that they had.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
All right, Mitch, so let's talk a little bit now about the Mike Conley trade. So this happened today, Wednesday morning. I'm at work. I'm on Twitter. Bam, it happens at a KSL. Everybody's talking about it. Mike Conley goes to the Utah Jazz. They send back Grayson Allen, Jay Crowder, Kyle Korver, their 2019 first, and then a future first-round pick that is more than likely to convey in 2022 when it will be only a top eight protected pick. The protections on the pick before that are very specific, and they're in the lottery range. So unless something goes terribly wrong for the Jazz, it's not going to convey until that point. So, Mitch, I'm going to let you just kind of give your brief thoughts on this, whatever you have. And then I have thoughts on this, obviously, as a Jazz fan. I had lots of thoughts. And if you follow me on Twitter this morning, you saw those thoughts. I tweeted about it a lot.
Yeah, I'm going to make my thoughts quick because I really want everyone else to hear your thoughts on this because I think they're very valid and very well thought out.
Well, thank you.
No, they are. They are. Absolutely. Look, at first glance, you think that Utah gave up a lot for Mike Conley because Mike Conley's 30. He's 30 years old. But he plays like he's like 26, 27 when he's healthy. Grayson Allen didn't really pan out to what they thought he was going to be. Kyle Korver is contemplating retirement. He is like in his 16th year in the league. And then, you know, Jay Crowder is a big hit, and I will let you get into that a little bit more. The picks are what really intrigue me here. It's a late lottery pick. Like you said, late lottery pick 20 or 2020 or 2021. And that could become a lightly protected pick 2022 to 2024.
Yeah.
which means probably outside, you know, a top 10 protected pick at that point, which is still not heavily protected. So, and actually I misspoke. Conley is 31 years old.
Yeah.
Not 30. So, I mean, at first glance, you'd think that the Jazz really gave up way too much for Mike Conley, but with the energy that he plays with and as healthy as he has kept himself over the years, he still plays like he's about 27, 28 years old. Dallin, let's get into your thoughts, because even before we recorded, you gave me your whole spiel on this, and I would love to hear it again, honestly.
I did. I kind of ranted, and I caught myself halfway, and I'm like, man, I've just been talking for a while.
Just finish the rant there. At that point. Yeah.
All right, so here's the thing. My number one option, if I had my choice for the Jazz this summer, would have been D'Angelo Russell. He's young. He's really talented. Obviously, first-time All-Star this season. He's friends with Donovan Mitchell. It would give them a super potent offensive backcourt. One of the issues the Jazz have with Donovan Mitchell is he is undersized for a shooting guard. He's only 6'3", so he's really the size of a point guard. So to put him next to another small guard, if they're not good defensively, can be a liability. D'Angelo Russell's 6'5", so he'd kind of balance out there the height issue that they would come across. It was a good fit, but there's a lot of issues with that. It would depend on Brooklyn relinquishing their rights. If they signed Kyrie, then the assumption would be to let go D'Angelo Russell. And then he'd have to choose to go to Utah, and he would have suitors in Minnesota and in Phoenix and in Indiana and in Orlando, and he'd have to ultimately choose Utah. So as much as that was a great idea and a great fit, there was a lot of factors, you know, that would have to lead to it. But in Mike Conley, what the Jazz get is a veteran, all-star level player that isn't going to hinder the development of a Donovan Mitchell, and is just going to complement what the Jazz do well. He is one of the best at NBA players at scoring in the pick and roll, and the Jazz are the number one team at the pick and roll. Rudy Gobert, that is what he does, and they've done it more and more and more. Mike Conley's going to make Rudy Gobert better. I think we're going to see upwards of 18 to 20 points a game for Rudy Gobert this year because of that pick and roll. Mike Conley has the ability to distribute the ball, but not a pass. He can score, unlike a Rubio, so he complements Mitchell well, takes the pressure off of Donovan to be the only scorer on the court. He's also pretty good defensively, part of that grit and grind era of the Memphis Grizzlies, so he's going to fit perfectly in with Utah, who is focused on defense. And it's going to allow more spacing for Donovan Mitchell to do his thing. It makes so much sense basketball-wise. When you look at it financially, the Jazz have zero contracts guaranteed after the 2021 season. At that point is when Donovan Mitchell's presumed rookie extension would kick in, which they will obviously offer him. At that point, Rudy Gobert's extension would kick in, and he is eligible for the max, and there's a question of whether or not they'll max him out, but that's when that would start. Joe Ingles' $16 million contract is up at that point. Dante Exum's $9 million contract is up at that point. And Mike Conley's got 2 years and $60 million left on his contract. That will end at that season. So it gives the Jazz long-term flexibility to be able, at that point, decide what to put around Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert, or if it's just Donovan Mitchell, what other superstar are we bringing in to pair with him? If it's Gobert, what pieces are we putting around these two guys who are at max contracts to fill out the rest of the team? They're not committed to Mike Conley past what he will be productive as when he'll be 33 at that point. And they get a veteran guy who's tough, who's been in the playoffs, who's been in the Western Conference Finals, who knows what playoff basketball is like for a team that is generally inexperienced in the playoffs, other than getting into the second round a couple of times over the last 3 to 4 seasons. So I think it's the smartest move the Jazz could have made. It's not the one I wanted them to do, but this front office is so smart, and they know what they're doing, and they got themselves a guy who fits the Jazz, and it makes the whole team better, and they've left themselves the flexibility to go after a new power forward, a new four, and get a guy with some more perimeter shooting to replace Derek Favors. And they could be looking not only a lot different next year, but a lot better. This team is legitimately a Western Conference contender now. You can put them in the conversation with the Lakers, with the Golden State Warriors, with the Denver Nuggets. They are there. They have three stars, all-star level players, and a great team and depth around them. This is a dangerous team, and it's going to be fun to watch next season. And I just got so much more excited for the Jazz. That was a lot. Mike, I know.
That was a lot. Mike Conley's a great player. I do want to point out that he's only played a full season once in his career. That was 08-09. And he didn't even start every game. Injuries is a bug that bites him. The assists per game, he's not really a true point guard. I mean, he's never averaged more than 6.3 assists or 6.5 assists a game. He doesn't score exceptionally well.
No, he scored 21 points a game last season.
Well, and that was only the second time in his career he has scored over 20 points a game. The other time was 20 and a half, and before that he hadn't scored more than 17.2. So, I mean, he's not an exceptional scorer. He's not an exceptional passer. I think the veteran presence and the leadership ability of Mike Conley is gonna what's gonna play the biggest role for that Utah Jazz team, because they are full of such young talent there, and I think that's gonna probably what's gonna put them over the edge. Now, do you think that this means that Ricky Rubio is playing somewhere else next season?
100%. Ricky Rubio was told about a month ago that he was not the Jazz's top priority this offseason. And they were trying to get a scorer next to Donovan Mitchell, somebody that had a more of an offensive threat so that to take the pressure off of Donovan Mitchell. And yes, Mike Conley isn't a guy that's going to average 25 points a game, nor should he. Donovan averaged 23 this year. He's the scorer. But what Conley is going to give you is 16 to 18 points a game. He's a threat. Ricky Rubio's not a threat offensively. You can sag off of Rubio. You can force him to take open threes, and you're okay with that. But Mike Conley isn't that type of player. You can't just leave Mike Conley open at the three-point line and say, we're okay with him taking the shots. And that difference is huge.
I think you could argue that he is one of those guys because he, for his career, doesn't shoot. He shoots 37.5% from the three-point line.
Average in the NBA is 36. So he is above average.
So he's right about average.
Well, that's great. Because guess who was below average?
Well, Ricky Rubio. Sure.
And that's all this is. Listen, I'm not saying this is like the perfect player. The perfect player to pair with Donovan Mitchell.
No, I'm playing devil's Thompson. Advocate. Yeah.
And I think there's concerns to be had. He's not as splashy as a move of a lot of jazz fans wanted them to make. He's old. He's on the wrong side of 30. He's had health issues. I think there are reasons to be, maybe skeptical. But ultimately, this is a 2-year deal. They're not married to him long term. They're going to get him for whatever else he's good for in his NBA career. They're going to get that. And when he's already paired with a young offensive star in Donovan Mitchell, he doesn't have to be the number one scorer. He was in Memphis. It was him and Marc Gasol. And those grit and grind teams did not score that many points to begin with. But when they did, it was between Marc Gasol and Mike Conley. That's why you see those low numbers. And in Utah, he's not going to be expected to be a 22-a-night game kind of player. Donovan's going to average 24 to 25 points a game. Like I said, Rudy Gobert, I think, is going to make a leap and get up towards to 18 to 20 points a game. And if Conley can be productive, efficient, and get around 16 to 18 points a game, he is going to be enough of an offensive threat to open up the rest of the Jazz offense. And you're right, he's not a true facilitator, but the Jazz don't usually use one of those guys. Quite often, Joe Ingles is the one bringing up the ball and facilitating on offense. Donovan does it as well. So Mike Conley just fits into that mold of we can just have guys rotating with the ball. Rubio only averaged 6.5 assists last season for the Jazz. Those were low numbers for him because it's a different kind of system. It's not just one guy taking the ball down the court. It is multiple hands touching the ball, every possession, facilitating plays. And so Mike Conley and his skill set is going to fit right into that. So,
well, and just because I like playing devil's advocate with you here.
It's great. No, it's good. That's why we do this. You just
talked about how Ricky Rubio only averaged 6.5 assists
right.
a game. Mike Conley has never averaged more than 6.5 assists per game. In fact, he has averaged below that for his entire career at only 5.7. When I compare him to a top-tier point guard of Steph Curry, obviously the scoring is a lot different. You look at the shots taken per game, the field goal attempts per game, Steph Curry over his career is 17.1. Mike Conley right now is at 12 attempts per game. So the scoring isn't there. The assists aren't there. When you look at Steph Curry and his assists per game, 6.6 is what he's averaged. So a whole assist more per game over his career than Mike Conley. So for me to think that this is a huge step up for them is kind of hard for me to believe. When you compare him to a top tier point guard that's in the league. Now, I understand the excitement because Ricky Rubio obviously has been a liability for them, and he doesn't provide the same leadership qualities that Mike Conley does. And I think Mike Conley is a great team leader. I think that's going to be a serious presence on that team. But when you compare him to a top-tier point guard here like Steph Curry, there isn't a whole lot to be excited about. And so
– Well, here's the thing, Mitch. They weren't trading for a Steph Curry. They weren't trading for a top-tier point guard.
No, but it seems like numbers-wise, it was almost a lateral move.
No. Comparing Mike Conley's numbers to Ricky Rubio, it is not a lateral move. It is not a lateral move. He is clearly a better offensive player, and that's what the Jazz want, and that's what the Jazz need. They don't need a guy who can score 26 points a game. Guess what? They got one. His name's Donovan Mitchell, and he's going into his third season improving from the first season to the second, and he will continue to improve in his third. He is the offensive focal point of that team, but what Mike Conley gives you is another offensive threat, which is something the Jazz don't have, a guy who can create their own offense and score. Joe Ingles can't do that. Rudy Gobert can't do that. Ricky Rubio couldn't do that. And to Mike Conley, they had that. They didn't trade for a Steph Curry type. They traded for a good player, an all-star level, an all-star caliber player, if you will, in Mike Conley, a guy that can be consistent and take the pressure off of their young superstar. And that's what they needed. They don't need a Steph Curry. They need a guy like Mike Conley, and that's what they got. And that's why it makes sense. It's not about the individual player. It's not about even comparing him to Ricky Rubio. It's what he brings for the team as a whole, what he unlocks for the team and the individual players on the team, and how he makes it all just work better than Ricky Rubio did.
So the assists per game, as far as assists go, and what really you measure a lot of what a point guard does.
But that's where I got to say, Mitch, the Jazz system is not predicated on one guy handling the ball. Ultimately, the Jazz want Donovan Mitchell to take a James Harden-esque role in the offense, to be the facilitator and the scorer, to kind of be the one-man show running everything. But Donovan's not there yet, which is why, you know, a guy like Mike Conley can help, because he has some of those skills, but he's not primarily focused on that like a Ricky Rubio. And Joe Ingles is also involved in the facilitating. So again, they're not, if they wanted a Ricky Rubio type, they would have kept him. But they're not looking for that. They're looking for something different, which is why they traded for Mike Conley.
Well, Mike Conley scores more, that's for sure.
And that's what they want. They want a guy who can score next to Donovan Mitchell and take the pressure off of him.
I mean, when you look at true point guard stats, I mean, Rubio is a better passer. He has averaged almost two points per game.
Of course. And that's not to be argued. Absolutely, Ricky Rubio is a better passer.
He also, I mean, his three-point percentage is down. They shoot comparable as far as field goal attempts go.
Yeah.
But, I mean, honestly, like, this is coming from an Oakland A's fan who looks at looks at the economical side of things and the number side of things. And really, the replacement value of Mike Conley over Ricky Rubio is not that much to me. Like you said, the leadership value, right? Or like I said, the leadership value. So Mike Conley adds a veteran presence in a young group like that. But I don't think numbers wise, there's too much of a discrepancy really to say that Mike Conley is numbers wise going to make too big of a difference. I think this is still going to be a very good team. And I think that his leadership will have an impact on the team. It might buy him a couple wins. But I think overall, this is just a very slight vertical move, in my opinion. And that's just numbers based, because I'm a man of numbers, Dallin.
Yeah, and I understand that, but you're also overlooking all the other aspects of fit, of, you know, how one team works, how the Jazz work, what they're looking for, and the impact that Mike Conley has and is going to have on the team is way beyond his statistics and what it compares to Ricky Rubio. It's completely more than that. So if you're just looking at numbers, I think that's a mistake. And I think that you're not going to see the value in this trade. But when you look at everything as a whole and what this means for the Jazz offensively, defensively, how the team fits around each other, when they add a stretch four, a perimeter threat at the four next to all those players, this is going to be a very dangerous team that can run like a well-oiled machine.
Sure. I will take your takes with some consideration. And by the way, before we leave this topic, there has been a decrease in production since Ricky Rubio came over from Minnesota to Utah. Let's go ahead and take a quick break, plug the socials. When we come back, we're going to do NBA pre-draft. That's going to go on tomorrow, but we're going to do a little bit of pre-draft talk right now. So stick around and we'll be right back.
Thank you guys for listening to the Sports Hour today. Be sure, if you haven't already, to follow our socials. You can find us on Twitter at Sports Hour Guys, Instagram at The Sports Hour Guys, and you can like our Facebook page. Be sure to follow those socials. Interact with us. We want to hear from you. Now back to the show. Welcome back, guys. Let us take a look at the NBA Draft 2019. It's happening tomorrow night, Mitch. And there is one thing we can for sure say about this draft, Mitch. Do you know what that is?
That a basketball player will be picked.
Oh, well, okay, there's more than one thing we can say, because that is correct. The one thing we can say is that Zion Williamson is going to be the number one pick. That is a for sure foregone conclusion. It was a foregone conclusion 6 months ago, basically. And it is still the same. Zion is the number one pick, and it's going to go to the New Orleans Pelicans. Now, after that is where things get interesting. And before we move on to the rest of the draft and specifically looking at the lottery, let's talk just briefly about Zion and what it's going to mean to the New Orleans Pelicans, who traded away, like we talked about, Anthony Davis, arguably the best player they've ever had in their franchise history, for the next best thing since Anthony Davis. And they've surrounded Zion with a much better team than Anthony Davis had when he started. And there's a lot of intrigue with the young players around him. Mitch, what, as we look at what will be his rookie season, what do you expect from Zion? And is this going to be an exciting young team? Or are they going to suck? Like what is the team going to look like, and what is he going to do for New Orleans?
I don't have a whole lot of hopes for the New Orleans Pelicans, especially when you add guys like Ingram, who's had injury issues and development issues, Lonzo, who has not been the guy that we thought he was going to be. And then you add a guy like Zion, who has all the athleticism in the world, all the versatility in the world. 6'7", 285. He makes LeBron look like a child when it comes to size. I could see him being a bust.
Really? Okay, Mitch, why?
I just think that he's too one-dimensional. And if you take the one thing away from him, what else is he going to do? He's not a great shooter. He's not a great free throw shooter. He's not a good three-point shooter. He doesn't shoot well from mid-range. He's a great slash guy because he's big and he's physically imposing. But if you take that away from him, what else is he going to do? He doesn't have a whole lot. And I think that – and this is where I don't like the one-and-done type stuff in college basketball – is you don't spend enough time developing your game. And a lot of guys would say, like, oh, well, you're decreasing your draft value if you spend too much time in college, because then that's more wear and tear on your body. But I feel like Zion isn't a complete basketball player. I think he's just a very physically imposing player that happens to be pretty good at slashing when it comes to basketball. And I think if you take that away from him, there's not a whole lot left to look at him. I mean, look at his college statistics. 33.8% from the 3-point range. He's a 64% free throw shooter.
Yeah, he's a big man. He's not supposed to do that.
But he's not a big man. He's 6'7".
Yeah, but he plays like a – he's a Draymond Green, and that's the thing. Like, is Draymond a great 3-point shooter? No, he's not a good shooter. He's not a good jump shooter, and Zion isn't either. Like,
but Draymond has a clutch gene that we don't know if Zion has yet. Well, and so I don't know.
That, maybe that's a part of it, but –
But so that's where I think that – and Zion has a lot of defensive skills that I feel like are very, very valuable. He's very good defensively. But I think that the offensive prowess that you think he's going to have may not be there if they take the one thing away from him that he can do, which is slash and drive.
Okay, but here's my argument for that, Mitch, is I could say that if you took the 3-point shot away from Steph Curry, that he would be nothing. Right? And that's true because that's his great skill set. But the thing is
are we talking about Steph Curry now or Steph Curry going into the draft?
We're talking about
because okay, Steph Curry,
but like he became the player he is today. But the thing is when you're good at something, to say if you took that away from them, they become nothing, of course, but like can you take it away from them?
I'm not saying
Can you take away the 3-point shot from Steph Curry? Truly. No, you can't because he has other skill sets. One, he can still hit threes over four people and 40 feet away from the bucket, but he has the passing ability to find open defenders. He also is good at going to the rim. Zion is not that one-dimensional. It's not like if you can stop him from going to the rim, all of a sudden he's useless. He's an above-average passer for a big man. He has vision to him. He can facilitate in a different way than just a point guard getting assists. He can find open guys. He's great in the pick and roll. He's not just given the ball and run to the hoop. That's not the point. And he can develop all those other skills. LeBron used to basically be that. LeBron was bully his way to the hoop and get points. And now LeBron is way more than that. And it took time to develop that. And Zion will have to do that. But that's a weird argument, I think, to make. If you take away their number one skill set, then they're nothing. You can say that about any player, but the question is, can you take that away?
I never said he was nothing.
Well, you said he'd be a bust.
Because I don't think if you take that away from him, he's worthy of a number one pick.
Well, okay, sure.
He's still a first-round talent, but I'm not going to say he's not saying – What? Okay, so if he's not a number one overall pick, he's not a draftable guy.
No. Listen, we're doing the if game again. If this, if that. We don't know what he's going to end up being, but what we know right now is that at the very least, if he can't do anything offensively, he is a five-position defender who is going to have an impact on the offensive end because of his athleticism and his energy and his strength. So he's going to be good. How good will he be? We don't know. And you're right. He needs to develop more of a jumper, more of an outside game. But I look at him and I see Draymond Green, but stronger and more athletic and probably has a higher offensive upside than Draymond Green currently has.
Okay. I see a poor man's Charles Barkley.
Okay. Okay. And that's, you know, that's another comparison. I know the Ringer has like a Blake Griffin type, which I also think is a pretty fair type, you know, an inside kind of player. The game and where it's at, you know, he fits the game defensively with his versatility and switching, but offensively his lack of an outside game. Sure. That's an issue, but I don't know. I see too much athleticism and raw talent there to see it ever disappear unless he just gets zero development whatsoever. You know what I mean?
I think we'll have to agree to disagree on this one again. I mean,
okay,
Mitch
thinks Zion will be a bust.
I'm not saying he's going to be a bust. I'm saying that there's a lot of potential for him. I'm saying there's a lot of potential there for him to be a bust.
More so than other players.
More so than the other top five.
So you think Ja Morant has a higher floor than Zion Williamson?
I think you could argue that.
That's surprising to me. So let's talk about Ja Morant. Memphis has come out and said, we're taking him number two. They traded Mike Conley. That move was also to open the spot for him to be their starting point guard. I like Ja Morant a lot. I'm pretty high on him. I think just as his playmaking ability in and of itself is enough to warrant his pick. He has offensive upside, but more than anything, he is a creative playmaker and he's going to find a lot of guys open. And I think the pairing with him and Jaren Jackson Jr. is great, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Mitch, what do you like about Ja Morant and the fit with Memphis?
He's a playmaker. He's a playmaker. He has the ability to dish the ball very, very well. He's almost kind of a more true point guard type player. Very good passing ability, but has also the ability to score. Here on the Ringer, they compare him to Donovan Mitchell, a very Donovan Mitchell type player, where he can be a general on the court and lead an offense, but he can also be the guy that spots up and scores. He's to me the most well-rounded player, I think, in the draft this year.
Really? He has a ton of defensive liability to him, which I think is a lot of people's issue, especially with how good point guards are offensively in the league. To have a guy that, you know, is going to be a liability on defense would worry some teams, but you're not worried about that?
Well, I'm not too worried about that, because I think a lot of defensive stuff comes with just more effort, and that might be the issue. I don't know if that's more the issue, if he's just lacking effort on defense or not. But offensively, I feel like that he is a little bit more well-rounded than Zion. And maybe the defensive prowess isn't as sharp as it is with Zion. Offensively, I mean, look, the NBA is an offensive league right now, and he's a very smart playmaker. His jump shot could use a little bit more work, but I feel like he has a basketball IQ that is a lot that is going to be tough to compete with.
Yeah, no, like I said, I'm very high on Ja Morant. I think he is in the mold of some of these guys that we've seen enter the NBA after the Steph Curry kind of mold, these high scoring, facilitating type players like a Trae Young. I think he can have a similar impact in his rookie season that Trae Young had for Atlanta. I'm very high on him. I'm excited for Memphis. And like I said, pairing him with Jaren Jackson Jr. is going to be a ton of fun in Memphis. And I think they have themselves a really solid core there.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely.
So let's look at number three. Number three is the New York Knicks. Right now, I'm going to share this. I saw this on Twitter recently. Reports are saying that the Pelicans are assembling assets for a, quote, all-out trade for the number two pick so that they can draft RJ Barrett and pair him with Zion, which is a fascinating thing. Now, what I think the issue with this is the Pelicans must think that Memphis is bluffing on this Ja Morant thing, because Memphis has come out and said we're picking Ja Morant number two, and RJ would go number three to the Knicks. So if the Pelicans are going to try to trade with anybody, it would make sense to try to trade with the Knicks. I just don't know if the Knicks are maybe interested in giving up that pick, but let's talk but that could be a possibility in the future. So we'll kind of keep an eye on that. And the Knicks pick has been floated around quite a bit. It may end up in somebody else's hands before tomorrow night, but if the Knicks pick, they'll most likely take RJ Barrett. He's the third best of these top three players. This is a guy that can score. I don't know what more he is outside of that and how dominant he'll ever become in the NBA, but he does have the upside of a guy that is just can score the ball, and he will score the ball, and you're going to get that with RJ Barrett.
Yeah, he's a skinnier Zion Williamson. That's pretty much what he is. About the same height, a lot less build, 285 to 202. So Zion outweighs him by more than 80 pounds right now. Similar skill set, similar statistics coming out of college. Not as physically imposing as Zion is. But I think he needs to sharpen his skills to be a more talented, more well-rounded player. But a lot of potential there. And so I don't see any reason that he wouldn't go number three to the Knicks. I do think that it would be a smart pick taking him number two If they were to able, if the Pelicans were able to package a trade to go up to number two and go get RJ Barrett, package him with Zion. And we saw that, I think it was the Kings. They, it was when they drafted De'Aaron Fox. And who was the other guy out of Kentucky that they needed to go get?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, his mind's the name's slipping me. But if you had just gotten those two, like, you would have been okay because they already have this time playing together.
Right.
And I think that's what RJ Barrett and Zion Williamson would have if they were able to go get the number two pick and go take him at number two. You have that that camaraderie, that history built up together to go play together. I think would be a very valuable asset to the Pelicans. But I think it's going to be a steep price for them to be able to do that. So I have RJ going to the Knicks at three.
Yeah, no, it would be an interesting pairing. I think they complement each other really well. RJ is a wing player, Zion down low in the pick and roll. There's a lot of fun things that can happen that we saw at Duke this last season that I think they could replicate in the NBA in a lot of ways. Which is why I think I like the Pelicans thinking about that. If they can pull it off, great. No matter what, I think those are the three guys. I would be shocked if the top three picks are not Zion, Ja Morant, and RJ Barrett.
Yeah, no, I feel the same way. Feel the same way.
All right, let's talk about number four. This pick was the Lakers pick, now traded to New Orleans. This pick is also kind of being shopped around here and there. Some teams are interested in trying to move up. Maybe I think I saw something yesterday that the Pelicans are attempting to maybe move that pick and assets to get like a Bradley Beal. I mean, that pick could end up in other hands, but this is where the draft gets interesting. Many people are at different places on their big boards and in mock drafts about who goes at number four. Though the consensus, it seems that if the Pelicans keep the pick, that a guy like Jarrett Culver would be the guy that they would pick. Mitch, any thoughts on that or specific players you'd want to see in New Orleans?
I mean, Jarrett Culver seems like the next logical pick to me. Good all-around game, a good solid player. He's a sophomore out of Texas Tech, a good guard, just a good solid guard. That's all I can really say about Jarrett Culver, really. He seemed like the best fit for the Pelicans. If they're going to take Zion at one, they seem like they need to go get a guard. Then the Pelicans probably need to go get Jarrett Culver.
Yeah, you know, I am actually more on – I think if they're going to keep that pick, they should draft DeAndre Hunter. He's a 3-and-D type guy, shot a ridiculous 48% from three this year, which obviously is unsustainable, but the best outside threat at this point in the draft, unless you're really reaching for a guy – and that's what the Pelicans are going to miss out on. Jrue Holiday, Lonzo Ball, and Brandon Ingram, and Zion, for that matter, are not outside threats. You know, some of those guys maybe a little bit, but ultimately they don't have that kind of guy. So to bring in a DeAndre Hunter and pair him with that lineup would give them a guy that teams can't leave open at the three-point line and give them more perimeter shooting. So I think that is a guy that fits. Culver is a great offensive weapon, but he is a more creating his own shot, kind of what they already have in what Ingram and Jrue Holiday do. And I think that would be a little redundant. So personally, I like the DeAndre Hunter, but again, this point in the draft is just hard because we don't know what's going to be available. We don't even know who's going to have that pick. And ultimately, you know, these players are pretty close. Everyone's just kind of different on how they feel about them as far as who's better or who's got higher upside. So it'll be interesting to see how it all shakes out. But, yeah, I mean, that's all I have on number four, Mitch.
Yeah. Yeah. Number five is the Cleveland Cavaliers. What don't they need? I mean, like,
yes,
they need a lot. They need a lot. And I think that you could start with a point guard. And I have Darius Garland going there at number five.
I really like Darius Garland there too.
A shot a very similar 3-point percentage to DeAndre Hunter. DeAndre yes. Hunter shot at 48.3%. He shot 47.8. A very good shooter from the perimeter. Perimeter scoring is probably his strength, I would say, and the Ringer agrees. Perimeter scoring is going to be his main selling point here. the big fallout from him is that he's not a true point guard. Maybe that he doesn't pass the ball maybe exceptionally well. He's undersized. He's kind of a smaller type point guard, not necessarily in height, but in weight, he definitely is. He's 6'2", 175. I mean, I take dumps bigger than Darius Garland. We can cut that out if you want. he's undersized. He gambles a little bit too much. He's not really a good below the rim type guy. He's going to play perimeter. But I think that that's probably someone that Cleveland needs right now. They need a good guy to set up an offense. And I think Darius Garland is going to be that guy.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they have Colin Sexton, who they drafted last year in the top 10. And he's a similar player to Darius Garland in some ways. So it is a little redundant. But because, like you said, they have too many holes, they don't need to think about fit. They just need to get the best talent there. If New Orleans did pick DeAndre Hunter, then I think Jarrett Culver would be best at this spot. To play alongside Colin Sexton. But if Culver does go, then I think, yeah, Darius Garland would be the spot that I would look at if I was Cleveland.
Yeah. So let's
look at number six, Phoenix. We talked about them a little bit with Jrue Holiday. They're in need of a point guard. Darius Garland would, you know, maybe be available here if he gets picked. Then maybe Coby White. That's who I would look at if I were them, point guard out of North Carolina. They just need somebody to pair up. They just need to find a fit next to Devin Booker. And maybe they end up trading this pick to find that player in the NBA currently, or maybe they use it here. But if they're going to pick, to me, Coby White would be that guy.
And I'm 100% on board with you. Coby White, North Carolina. Very good first step. Very quick. He is a good facilitator, makes very sound fundamental passes off the dribble, and that's what I like about him. He's a very good point guard to take at this spot, and I feel like that's probably the best guy that they can go get.
For sure, for sure. All right, let's move past Phoenix to the Bulls at number seven. They're also a team looking at a point guard, so the Darius Garlands, the Coby Whites, if those guys are available still, that's kind of where they would look. Maybe DeAndre Hunter if he falls at this point. I think they're another team that's just trying to find talent. I mean, they have just a ton of young players, and I don't really know how it all fits together. So I think they're going to be itching for a point guard here. And if Garland or a Coby White isn't available, I don't really know what direction they would go.
I got DeAndre Hunter going here. I think he's going to be the best available. I think that he's going to, the other teams are going to fill their needs, and he's going to be the best available guy to go get. Like the Cavs, a lot of holes.
Yeah.
So they need to fill the holes that they have. And DeAndre Hunter, I think, might slip a couple picks to the Bulls, and that might be the guy that they need to go get.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Okay. Let's kind of go through these kind of quick, Mitch. Atlanta has 8 and 10 and 16 for that matter, but the most common projection at 8 is Cam Reddish, who has a ton of upside, who a lot of people expected more of at Duke, but kind of, you know, fell in the shadows of Zion and RJ. Still has a ton of upside, just a talented offensive player who just kind of had a bad year in college, and now nobody really knows what to think of him. But I think he has a very high ceiling. If it were to work out, I think Atlanta would be a perfect spot for him. They have a Trae Young already. I think he would fit well next to him. Just another offensive threat. And that's kind of what they need. They have like a guy like John Collins, but he's down low. He's not quite that offensive threat. They need somebody else besides Trae Young. And I think Cam Reddish would be that perfect guy.
Yeah. Tons of scoring upside with Cam Reddish. And I've read a couple things about how he's the most complete guy coming into the draft. I don't know if I 100% buy that, but there's a lot of scoring upside and a high floor for him. It seems like that he is a Paul George light type player, and that he could have a serious impact on an Atlanta Hawks team at the 8th pick.
Yeah, for sure. They also have 10. The names I've kind of seen around there is a big guy like a Jackson Hayes, maybe a Ball Ball, maybe a Brandon Clark out of Gonzaga. It'll be interesting to see where they go there. They also have 3 picks. They also don't want those 3 first round picks. They're a team that's looked to move up to maybe 4, maybe 3. I know that I think it was the Knicks turned down the 3 pick for 8 and 10. They didn't want to do that, but they are a team that's looking to move up. So they may package some of those picks and move up because they have enough young players as it is to continue to fill out the roster with first round picks. Isn't really smart at this point. You need to start getting, you know, veterans and other players around those more established players.
Yeah. I think Jackson Hayes probably falls number 9 to the Wizards. Just a big guy. That's going to do a lot. But when we come to the Hawks, Bol Bol seems like a good fit there. Another big man, another forward, shot extremely well from the outside. This guy's perimeter shooting thing is way better than what his dad, Manu Bol, if you don't remember that name, was a one of the tallest players to ever play in the NBA at 7'7". His son, Bol, played at the University of Oregon. I think he's around 7'2". He's 7'2 and a half with a 7'7 wingspan. The guy's a monster, but shot very well from the perimeter. In fact, 52% from 3-point range. Guy plays very well, but the size thing is a thing. He's 7'2", but only 208. And he's
a stick.
He's a stick, but I think could make a very big impact on an offense. And defensively, I think he's a good shot blocker to have down in the post for the Atlanta Hawks.
Yeah, Bol Bol would be an interesting fit there in Atlanta because of, like you said, the offensive upside that he has and the fact that he's that tall and really can spread the floor completely. Which not a lot of big guys can do. There's a guy later on, and maybe this is a guy they look at 16, but Goga Bitadze? I don't know foreign name, guys. He's from Georgia, not the state, but the country. He's like Yusuf Nurkic-esque, which is what the Ringer has as a comp for him, which I think is pretty good. A really good offensive player that I think could fit well with, you know, Atlanta, what they're trying to do and basically making a Golden State light out in the Southeast. He has a lot of perimeter potential, is a good free throw shooter, which usually bodes well for perimeter shooting at 71% for a big guy. So that would be an interesting fit for me, but maybe 10 would be too high to pick him. So at 16, maybe that's a possibility. But I think if they're going to go Cam Reddish there or forward type, then big man is what they're looking at number 10. So, all right, Mitch, let's look at let's not look at any more individual teams. I want to ask you, from the 10 to 20 range, who are some players that you are maybe particularly high on, guys that – or maybe just intrigue you that you'll be interested in next season?
Well, Bol Bol is one of them, just because he's not really projected to go in the top 10 right now. But Nickel Alexander Walker is another one. Yes. Guard, Virginia Tech, out of Virginia Tech, has been compared to Shai Gilgeous Alexander, Malcolm Brogdon.
That's his cousin.
I'll be damned.
Yeah, and they're very similar players. And I think a lot of people think SGA has a higher upside than NAG. But, yes, similar players because of the, you know, cousins, their families. So.
Right. There's him. Romeo Langford out of Indiana is another one. I also want to look at where'd he go? PJ Washington out of Kentucky. Another big scorer. Strong bodied, has a lot of room to improve, and another big guy, 6'8", 230. So with a large wingspan at 7'2". So Another guy that I would really want to keep an eye on, probably here in this 10 to 20 range, guys that maybe may slip up a little bit earlier.
Yeah, for sure. A couple guys I'm keeping my eye on, Rui Hachimura and Brandon Clark both played at Gonzaga, being a part of BYU media, during the basketball season. I follow Gonzaga heavy as well because they're in the same conference. They play twice a year. And those are two very talented players. Rui Hachimura reminds me a lot of like Miles Bridges and the impact that he could have on a team next season as a veteran type guy. Hachimura is a little bit older. He's not the, you know, 18-year-old coming into the league. He's 21. So he has some experience, could come in and contribute for a good team, be a solid bench player. I think that's a guy with a high floor. I think he could be a really good rotational player. Brandon Clark, has a lot of defensive versatility as a big man. He's he's a smaller type, I guess. Not, you know, the typical size of a big man, but has the versatility like Zion. He's only 6'8", but he can switch. He can guard multiple positions. And I think in the modern NBA, he has an interesting fit. And if a team knows how to use him right, he could be very good. You know, I think Ball Ball is another name that just interests me. Just an interesting player who had his season cut short at Oregon this year. We didn't really get to see his full potential. If he has a healthy season, he's probably a top five pick. But because we didn't have that, there's question marks that's going to make him drop into the late lottery, you know, late teens. And so a team that can develop him, and obviously health is a factor there. If he stays healthy and he can be developed, he could be a really good player, one of the better ones in this draft, who fell just because of the circumstance of his season.
Yeah, yeah, no, injuries play a big role, and that's definitely the bug that bit him. So
yeah, hey, you know, it's interesting. We're a day away from this draft, Mitch, and like you and I have talked about, there are still quite a few picks that are up for grabs, potentially trades to be made. Milwaukee just traded the number 30 pick in the draft, in order to get off a long-term contract in Tony Snell. So now Detroit has number 15 and number 30. So there's a change there. Obviously New Orleans just picked up some picks. Memphis just picked up the 23 pick from Utah, and we're still a day away and there's still question marks. Number 3, number 4, number 6, the Hawks, 3 first rounders. I mean, there are some things that can happen, which could really change the way this draft turns out. I'm just excited for it to happen, Mitch. I'm excited to see Zion on stage in the Pelicans hat. I'm excited to see the craziness that happens at the draft after that. And just get more and more excited for free agency and then this upcoming NBA season.
Yeah. Yeah, no, this is another exciting time. It's kind of like the NFL draft. Everyone gets excited for it, and it'll be a very interesting Thursday night, that's for sure.
All right. Anything else with the draft, Mitch? I think I'm good.
Yep, that's it. That's all I got.
All right. Well, guys, thanks for listening. This has been the Sports Hour with Mitch, Mo, and Dallin. You already know where we're at the Sports Hour, guys, on Instagram, at Sports Hour, guys, on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter, at Little Thoint, if you also want more stuff that I tweet out. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts if you haven't already. Leave us a review or rating. We appreciate it. Mitch, what else do they need to know?
Let's see. Well, we got this episode coming out. We got an anniversary episode that will drop soon. We recorded that about a month ago. So that'll come out pretty soon. So keep your eyes out for that. And make sure to get on the socials and tell us we suck. That's the only way we can get better.
We love you guys. We appreciate you. And we will catch you next week.
See ya.